Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering Division III sports through interviews with those involved in Division III. Today we have former Wesleyan first team All-American and current G League player for the Motor City Crews, Sam Peek. Obviously, every professional has had a good playing career. They've done some crazy things in their career, but Sam really has seen it all, going from the D3 level, D1 to professional, and being the best guy on the one team, and then the next year being the last guy off the bench. So Sam definitely has a lot of unique experiences relating to different types of basketball, and we get into all of that with him, what it's like playing in the Division I level and then jumping into the G League, getting cut from a G League team. So definitely a ton of basketball talk in this episode. Hope you guys enjoy. Appreciate you tuning in, and let's get into the conversation with Sam. I'm here with Sam and Neruda. How you guys feeling today?
What's up, fellas? I'm good, man. Good. Happy to be here.
Appreciate you joining this pod, bro. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure, man.
So I was tuned into a little bit of your G League games this weekend. How'd you feel after this weekend?
Yeah, the games were good. I just started out with a new team, so I'm like four games in, so I'm still getting used to the coaches, the players, the offense, the city, like the travel. So past couple of days were good. I played the most minutes I played in those past four games last game, which was like 12 minutes. I had a bucket, a couple rebounds. I was pretty happy with the way I played. So it's going good, man. It's just a learning experience and having fun too.
That's fire. That's fire. Keep producing. Keep producing. We're tuned
That's
in.
That's it. Got to produce. But if you produce as you play, that's it.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
That's the recipe. That's the recipe. But so let's get into a little about your childhood. Your household was full of hoopers. You have a brother who played at NYU. Your sister played D1 at Fairfield, and a brother who's at New Haven right now, also killing it. So talk a little about what the household was like growing up.
Yeah. We always, like, my dad was a high school coach. My family was always in sports. So, like, it was always, we were playing baseball, we were playing basketball, we were playing soccer, football a little bit. But basketball was the main sport. So, everybody, it was like, I started playing, my brother started playing, and then, you know, of course, my sister follows along. She was just watching us. So, I mean, I just remember that from a super early age. We were always all played. And then Major was the big fella who has been living with my family for like 6 or 7 years. He came in a little late, but you just add another hooper to the family, you know, it only gets more competitive. But it was fun just growing up, just, you know, that's what we did. Like, it's how we bonded a little bit. Like, we'd all just go work out. So it was cool. Yes. Yeah.
Who's the best? Who's the best?
Yeah, me.
I don't know if they're jacking that.
I was going to say, they might be
different. Yeah. Yeah. you ask anybody, it's a different answer. But yeah, man, we just compete so much. We have fun, 2-on-2, 1-on-1. We've helped my sister a lot. Just seeing her game translate to the college level. She's struggling a little bit right now, but she's going to be right back up. She had a great freshman year. So, yeah, everybody's getting the good results from it.
That's so, tough.
Yeah, talking a little bit more about your childhood, you grew up in the Dutchess County area in the 845. And, you know, some people say New York State, at least, the 845 has some of the best hoopers. Talk about what it was like going against top competition in your area, like every time you went to go work out or play pickup or whatever it may be.
Yeah, yeah. It was so fun. And now it's, like, more fun because everybody's, like, older.
Yeah.
Like, they're playing pro or they were playing college or just finished up college. So everybody's almost at their peak, so it's cool. But growing up, yeah, I mean, like, the Poughkeepsie, Newburgh, Beacon, like, that whole area, there's so many good hoopers, man. Elijah Hughes, like, Tyrese Williams, Malachi, a bunch of so many guys. So, yeah, Elijah did that first. It's called In the Water podcast. He did, like, the tournament last year, and I wasn't able to go. But I heard it was crazy. Like, so much turnout. They had so much fun. Like, so I'm really looking forward to playing that next year. But, yeah, there's a lot of good hoops in the area, and, yeah, guys are taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I think my boy Dayon played in it. Like, my boy Dayon, he goes to
Utica. Yeah, I mean, the list is, like, crazy. Like, there's so many good hoopers. It's fun.
I got another who's the best 845 hooper you think.
Shit, somebody – we might have to do a one-on-one game with me and Eli, man. That's it.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough.
Next In the Water Classic, yeah, it should be it. At halftime. Y'all do that or something like
that. Yeah, right. I'm more worried about that winning that Poughkeepsie game.
Here we go. So you played with the NY Jayhawks also growing up. That's what I read online, at least. I don't know if correct or not. And you also went to a NEPSAC school in Trinity Pauling. So what was kind of playing at those different levels? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I started off, I did 2 years at Spac and Kill.
Okay.
So I went to Spac and Kill until my 10th grade year. And at that point, I was just playing, like, you know, I never got past JV, so I just played. It was just regular, you know. Like, I was taking it seriously, but I was, you know, undersized. I was a late bloomer a little bit. But my junior year, I went to Trinity Pauling. They had, like, 8 seniors graduate or something, and there was a connect through a coach, and they, you know, brought me on this visit. And I was, like, I made the decision in August of the summer going into, like, about to go into that next year, my junior year in Spartan Club. I made the decision in August, so it was kind of, like, sporadic, but it was the best decision I ever made to go away from the home a little bit. Like, competition was so much better. Like, I've never even played against a Division I hooper until I really got there, you know? And then it was just this whole other world with all the NEPSAC schools, prep, post-grad, like, and that kind of introduced me to the whole scheme. And so, yeah, I did 3 years there. Got so much from it, like, met a lot of good dudes, got a good relationships, good coaches, trainers. Like, it just was a big level up for me.
Yeah. So after playing at that type of level with Jayhawks and also Trinity Pauling, what was your confidence like kind of going into your freshman year at Wesleyan?
It was high. Like, I knew I had played against, like, high-level competition, but when I was taking my visits, because I didn't have a single Division I offer coming out of high school, so when I was taking my visits, you know, I visited, like, Williams, Wesleyan, like Union, NYU, Babson, who was really good at the time. And I was playing pickup with these guys, and I had no idea, like, the skill level. Like, the big men are coming down. Like, I'm thinking they're the big men. They're the point guard. Like, they're coming down. They're throwing dimes. They're catching bodies. Like, I was like, whoa. So I just, like, realized it was, like, what does the Division I level look like if this is the Division III level? Yeah. So I knew it wasn't going to be easy coming in. And freshman year, I didn't play at all. Like, my last 2 games of my freshman year, I played 25 minutes because I had, like, this whatever, like, a 1 great game. But my freshman year, I didn't play at all, so it was a big adjustment.
Yeah. Let's get into a little bit about your early years at Wesleyan. Like you said, you weren't playing a ton your freshman year. I saw you only played in 13 games that year. Mm-hmm. And the next year, you started in 22 games. So talk a little about what that transition was like and what the teams were like in your first few years and how you were playing.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I've always took super seriously in between the seasons was, like, the summers. Like, every summer I got so much better. That was one thing that I think, separated me a lot from a lot of other people. So that summer, going into sophomore year, I knew we lost a lot, and I knew I was going to be a key guy, and I knew I was going to have to score. So I came in with a different mindset a little bit. But, yeah, I just worked my ass off in the summer, got to school, and just, like, was in the mindset of, like, go, attack, score. Like, I was just kind of locked in on a different level.
What were you kind of working on in the summers? Like, what were you focusing on, and like, what parts of your game?
Yeah, so at Wesleyan, I really became, like, an all-around player. I used to be, like, that one shooter, you know, on every team, like, didn't do anything else, just shot. But I started getting athletic kind of out of nowhere, and I started working out more, and, like, I started getting, you know, like, really athletic, and so I started attacking the rim more and doing other stuff. So I really, like, took my game to – I just wanted to make sure I could score at all three levels. Like, I was playing above the rim. I was working on my mid-range game, floaters, and now it's like if you shoot the three, you can play anywhere. So that's really what I'm trying to do now, like, just keep my shot continuing to get better because – like, at this level, guys don't fucking – no, they don't – sorry, they don't miss.
Nah, you good.
It's crazy. They don't miss.
Let's skip ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
Fast forward to your senior year. You had a crazy year. First team All-American, NESCAC Player of the Year. You averaged almost 18 points per game with 7 boards. You guys were rolling at Wesleyan, 25-4. Finished the year ranked 8th in the country. So let's talk about your senior year. Did you expect to have that good of a year? And – we're going to talk later on some playoff action, but let's talk about your senior year.
I mean, I knew we were going to have a really good year when so our junior year was COVID, so we didn't have a season. So there were some guys that decided to come to school and waste a year of eligibility, and some guys, like, took a gap year, you know? So there was, like, two seniors on our team who, if they came – or if there were two seniors on our team and they took a gap year during COVID and they came back – so we almost, like, we were, like, loaded for that senior year. You know, we had, like, my class and then the class above because they came back a year. They took a break just to win a NESCAC championship. You know, it was crazy. So we came in. We started off hot. Like, I mean, we were good. We were really good. I was playing great, but, I mean, I was, you know, I wasn't taking more than 13, 14 shots a game. Like, we had so many good guys. Like Jordan James, Anton Walker, Gabe Ravis, like all these guys. We had Nikki, Joe DeLolo. Like we were good. Like we were stacked. So it was such a fun year. We hosted the NESCACs. We hosted the tournament, NCAA tournament. I obviously did great. Like it was a great year.
Yeah. I want to say welcome to college basketball, but my freshman year, we started the year, we beat a top 25 team at Brockport, and I was thinking, like, oh, Alfred's one of the best teams in the country. So then we traveled to Franklin and Marshall, and I saw Wesleyan playing, and that's when I realized, like, there's levels to this Division III game. Like, this team is disgusting. So do you think that team kind of underperformed? You guys lost in the second round of the playoffs. Do you think that – like, do you have any regrets on that year? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely no regrets. I mean, that was such a fun year. Won a lot. But, yeah, I think we definitely could have made a serious run in that tournament. We got upset by RPI at our place. And, like, we were not, like, it was a shocker. Like, we were like, damn. When that game ended, we were like, bro, what did we just do? Like, we threw away, like, we could really spend something great, you know? But you couldn't look back on it too much. I mean, we did what we wanted. We won a NESCAC championship. We definitely underperformed a little bit, but I wouldn't take anything back.
So what kind of went into the decision for you to transfer to Stetson for your last year?
Yeah. So after my senior year, I had an extra year of eligibility because my junior year was COVID. So after that, I was always, like, thinking about maybe just putting my name in the transfer portal and see if anything came of it. So, I, you know, spoke to my family, spoke to my coaches, and I did. And I put my name in the portal just to see, because I always knew Wesleyan was a great fallback option for me. And I was even torn between going to Wesleyan and going somewhere else. Like, I loved Wesleyan, loved Coach Riley, loved the system. But, yeah, I put my name in the portal and got, like, 10-plus Division I offers. And, like, the span of, like, a week and a half, 2 weeks. And I was like, whoa, like, all right, now I got to make a decision, you know? Hmm. And it was tough. It was like, do I go back to Wesleyan where I know I can have a great year and be, you know, play it safe almost, or do I go take a chance at a Division I school and maybe only score 6-7 points a game, and maybe it turns out to be great, and maybe it turns out to be terrible, you know? So I took a chance, and, I mean, yeah, I can't imagine not going to Stetson. Like, it just set me up for pro basketball, you know, in general. Just the size and the speed. Like, if I was able to go from a Division III, like Ryan Terrell did, what he did is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, he went from that Division III and then just got thrown into the G League, which is – yeah, I mean – That's and he was playing well, too. He was playing, like, 15 minutes a game last year.
Yeah.
And that's my guy, and he can really hoop. And but, yeah, so it was crazy.
Yeah, so what other schools were involved in your, like, Division I when you were getting all these offers, and what ultimately stood out about Stetson?
Yeah, so, I mean, some of the offers I got, it was, like some of the MAC schools, like Marist, Manhattan, Siena. A couple other, the Atlantic Sun schools. I had like Winthrop, Arkansas State, Liberty. So a lot of them are like low to mid majors. And I took my first visit to Stetson. And I told my, I had like three visits lined up already. Like, I was going to go to Arkansas State. I was going to visit Townsend. And I was going to visit like one other school. And when I left Stetson, it was like the coaching staff were all like, you know, between all of them, there was like, 5 national championships. Like, the assistant was like a coach the assistant at Kentucky for a couple of years, like NBA experience over here. Like, it was just a great coaching staff with a lot of connections too. It was also in Florida, which was amazing. Like, 25 minutes from the beach. Like, it was, I mean, it was a life.
That sounds like the life for real.
It was a great 1 year for sure. But I look back on it and yeah, I know I made the right choice with Stetson. Especially where I am right now, you know.
I wanted to ask you, like, was any part of you like looking at some of the schools, especially near you, the Division I schools at least, that are now recruiting you after you graduate from Wesleyan? Are you looking at it like, damn, why didn't you guys come get me when I was graduating? Like, what happened? Yes, now definitely. You guys want me?
No, for sure. I mean, even schools like Marist were super close, like the Quinnipiacs, Manhattans were like kind of my backyard. And didn't even give me a look. But it's cool because it's like you're kind of finding, like, you know, as that high school player, like, you want to get the offer. You want to see it on Twitter. You want to do this. Like, you want to see you want to hear the coaches saying, I want to do this. I want to offer you. So for it to all, like, happen after it didn't happen the first time was a blessing for sure.
Did you notice any, like, big differences between the D3 game and the D1 game? And what kind of, like, troubles did you go through trying to seek your way through that transition?
It was tough. I mean, I remember my first summer going to Stetson, us playing pickup and me just being like, damn, like, you know, the kid that was guarding me was like 6'4", with like a 7'2 wingspan and like a 44-inch vertical or something. And I was like, how much, like, what do you want me to do, you know? So, I mean, that's really where I developed, like, catch shoot, because I couldn't really get past some of these guys. And I was getting past them, and sometimes I get blocked, sometimes whatever. So it took me some time to get used to the speed a little bit. But that summer definitely was huge, and just coming back in the fall and just being used to it. Again, like that Terrell D3 to G League, like, jump, I'm sure he went through some tough battles, but yeah, it definitely helped me. But the athleticism was crazy, the speed was crazy, everybody was stronger. It was definitely an adjustment for sure.
Yeah. So a little early on, we talked about the NESCAC tournament, and looking at some of the film through that game, there was about 1,000 people in every playoff game that you guys played. And then you transferred to a D1 school playing in the Atlantic Sun tournament. Give a little insight behind what the different experiences are playing in the NESCAC tournament, in the NCAA playoffs, in the D3 world versus at the Division I level.
Yeah. I mean, we had some good turnouts at Wesleyan for some of those NCAA tournament games and whatever games. Like, we had some really good turnouts. And that was, like, some of the first times I played in some, like, in front of, like, a bigger crowd for sure. And getting to Stetson, we didn't have huge crowds, but we played some away games. Like, you know, we beat Florida State at Florida State first game of the year. Like, we beat UCF. We beat USF. Like, we played in front of some big crowds. We played at Florida. So those were all super fun for me, especially getting to play and be running up and down and not just be watching and be on the bench, but actually to be involved in the action. So, yeah, that was an adjustment. And then even just coming to the G League, like, we went to Mexico City, and it was sold out, like, 22,000, like, you know? Crazy. Because there's no sports teams like those areas. But, yeah, it's Mexico City, 22,000, back-to-back nights. It was crazy.
So do you think that your game kind of elevates in those settings, or?
Yeah, I think it does. I think I'm still trying to figure out what it does in those settings, you know, because I haven't been in too many of them. And the ones that I have been in, like, it's, you know, sometimes it's 5 minutes, it's this, it's that. You know, you're not out there for 40 really getting the full experience. But I've definitely gotten used to the crowds a little bit more. But I'm still getting used to the whole jump. Like, I was, you know, like, it was only 2 years ago I was at Wesleyan, really, you know. It just seemed like a bunch has happened in between, but it's really just been – hasn't been that long.
That's crazy to think about. But let's take a quick break real quick.
Yeah.
And we're back. So I wanted to ask you, Sam, you said earlier, talked about how you played, you know, a lot of minutes at Wesleyan, and you was obviously one of the guys. And then you go to Stetson and also the G, and you're not playing as many minutes, still playing, but you still have to perform. So what is that, like, transition for you like, and how do you adjust to that?
Yeah, it was different. But also, like, before Wesleyan, like, I was kind of, you know, I was like, never – like that guy on every team, you know. It was really just like a little bit in AU, Wesleyan, I really took it to another level.
Yeah.
But then I got back, like, even Jayhawks, I wasn't playing that much. So when I got to Stetson, I was expecting to play a lot, you know. Like, I wanted to play a ton. And when it didn't happen, at first it was fine because I knew, you know, I've been in that situation before. Like, I knew I could fight back for minutes. I wasn't worried about that. So I ended up starting at Stetson, like, all the league play I started at the three. So I was playing a lot of minutes then, and then it went down a little bit, up a little bit. Like, you just got to know that it's just going to be a roller coaster. You know, it's going to be so many ups and downs, especially when you're switching leagues like this, like, moving different teams, like, different cities. And then when I got to the G League, I kind of knew it. I was expecting to play not many minutes, but that just adds even more pressure. So now the touches that you do get, like, you have to do something with, you know?
Yeah.
And when team, like, I'm on my herd team, the Bucks G League team, we were stacked offensively. Like, if I touched it once, it wasn't coming back. And that was okay because most of the time somebody make it. They'd be like, you know what I mean? You can't complain when guys are making shots. So, yeah, I really had to look for my shot first. And, I mean, if I had any space, I'm letting it go. And if I'm going to, you know, if you get up too close, I'm going to drive by you. And sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't. But I just gave my all on every possession because I was really only playing 3-4 minute stretches at a time, especially in the G League. So that's something I'm still getting used to. But yeah, it's tough. You just gotta do what you can every possession because you don't know what anyone's gonna look like. Really.
Yeah. So after Stetson, you went to the off season knowing that you wanted to play professional basketball at some level, whether it be in the G League or overseas. And I kind of wanted to just talk about your different pre-draft workouts. So another D3 guy, Duncan Robinson, obviously everyone in the NBA world kind of knows him. D3 guy also now, you know, making the big bucks, shooting threes, and being a good player for the Miami Heat. And he talked about on his podcast how he did the Celtic drill.
I was running the Celtic drill, which is like 3 minutes. So I ran the Celtic drill to start. I ran the Celtic drill halfway through my workout. And then I ran the Celtic drill again at the end of my workout.
Can you break down what that drill is?
It's just 3 minutes, full length of the court, as many touches as you can get in 3 minutes, which is brutal. I mean, it's just sprinting for 3 minutes straight. But the whole thing was like, we're going to show this guy, one, that you're working your ass off. Two, that you're not just like a catch and shoot guy.
He wanted to show the Miami Heat and the other teams that he worked out for how there's levels to shooting, how he's one of the best shooters that they will ever see. Kind of talk about your mindset going into all these pre-draft workouts and if you have any stories to share from them.
Yeah, so going into my pre-draft workouts, I had two. I had Lakers and Celtics, and I didn't really think I was going to get any pre-draft workouts. I wasn't expecting to get any. And I literally got – I was in Miami, and I got the call, like, from my agent and said, yo, Lakers want to – or, no, Celtics want to work you out tomorrow. Like, when can you fly out? I was like, damn. Like, I wasn't ready. But luckily, I've been – you know, I was training the whole – like, all summer, I was working my butt off. Like, that's – you know, if you're staying ready, like, you're good. So I knew I was fine. I knew I'd be ready for any opportunity. So I go out there. I do that workout. And then I wasn't even ready for the Lakers one. He texted me again. He goes, you're going to Lakers next. You're playing – you're doing about back-to-back. So I had to get on this flight to L.A. that night. And I went into the Lakers one. So I really wasn't expecting it. So I couldn't even have a real mindset going into it. But I just knew I had nothing to lose. And that most of these guys up here are, you know, were the man at their high major school. So I really had nothing to lose, and I just went out there. I defended like a dog. I shot every shot that I had, and I knew I was ready. I knew I was in shape, so that was really the main thing. But a couple stories. I don't even know. Just walking into those facilities was crazy. Just seeing everything, seeing the trophies and the banners, and then you're walking around. And I was actually eating lunch in the cafeteria, and Brad Stevens came up to me, and he was like – he's like, what's up, Sam? You know, thanks for the workout. Like, you know, we'll be you'll be hearing from us, this and that. And I was like, Brad Stevens, like, you know my name? You know what I mean? So it was cool. But it, but then I realized, I'm like, yeah, like, I guess I'm really in this, you know?
Yeah, what is the actual pre-draft, like, workout? You see a lot of clips on Instagram, but we're not actually there. So is it, like, get there and you're straight into it, or talk about what the process is?
Yeah, I mean, you get there, and, like, they stretch you out. You get loose with a trainer, and then you don't know what to really expect. So sometimes it'll be, like, I'm trying to think, the Lakers one, it was, like, a lot of live. Like, they want to get you tired. You know, they want to see who's in shape, who's been working out, you know. So they want to get you tired. Like, they'll do conditioning drills to start. Like, I've heard stories where they'll do conditioning for 20 minutes, they don't touch a ball, and then they play, you know, to see who's really about it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, our stuff was a lot of like, we were playing a lot of full court one-on-one. Like, I'm trying to stay in front of some of these guards. Like, I'm backpedaling, they're running at me a million miles an hour. Like, it was an experience, definitely. But yeah, just realizing that I was actually there in the moment, you know, was cool.
Yeah, I respect that. So you were the final cut for the Bucks G League affiliate, the Wisconsin Herd, in October. And then fast forward a few months, a few roster changes, opens up a spot for you, and you get a text on Sunday from the GM offering you a spot. So take us back to that day. Talk about what your emotions and thoughts were during that time period, and what the process has been from that day into where you are right now.
Yeah. So, so going into the Herd training camp, it was a 10-day training camp. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know who was going to be there. So I got there, and I knew right away they were kind of – like, you knew who they were keeping kind of. You know who was going to be between. They brought 18 to camp. They're keeping 13, so they're cutting five. And so the whole time I'm thinking I'm going to be right on the bubble. Like, you know what I mean? I'm going to be – it doesn't matter how many shots I'm going to make. Like, I almost had a perfect training camp. I shot the crap out of it. Like, I defended. Like, they loved me, you know? Like, I had a great training camp. And I knew I still wasn't going to be enough, and I was going to be on the bubble. And so, you know, like, the last day the coach called me in, he's like, listen, we love you. The coaches want to keep you, but there's no spots right now. We can only keep this many. You'll hear from us in a couple weeks if something changes. You're going to be the first on our board, whatever. But at that point, like, you know, they tell that to everybody. So wasn't taking – I was kind of just like, damn, you know?
Yeah.
But I knew I played great, you know. It wasn't like I went and had a shitty training camp and, you know, I missed my chance. Like, I knew I took full advantage of it. So, fast forward a couple of weeks later, they call me and they're like, we had some roster changes. Like, come tonight. So, I'm like, shit, I'm coming. I pull up, and then it's just like, I sleep right after the plane. I wake up, and I'm just in it. You know, 11 o'clock practice, 2 o'clock lift, whatever film. Like, they throw me in an apartment. Like, it was just happening so fast, you know.
Yeah.
So I was there for a little bit. It was great. I played like 12 games. I started five. There was just so many guys on that roster. Like, Ty Washington, Marquise Bolden, like Glenn Robinson, one of the Antetokounmpo brothers, like Wendy and Gabriel, like they were stacked. Drew Timmy. And at that point, Drew Timmy's like four off the bench. And I'm like, oh, how am I going to play? You know what I mean? Who's the best player in college basketball? He's fourth off the bench. But I broke the rotation. I was playing 10, 12 minutes a game. It was great. And I thought things were all good. And then they called me in one day and they were just like, there's some movement. We like you. We can't keep you. We're waving you. I was like, damn, just like that. So I went home. Was home for like 3 weeks just working out with my guy, Justin Cooper. I don't know if you guys know him. Working out with him, staying ready. And then I got a call in the morning from my agent. It was like 10:30 in the morning. And he was like, yo, you're either going to play for Westchester tonight in New York, or you're going to play for Detroit in Detroit tonight. And I was like, well, when are you going to let me know? You know what I mean? He's like, I'm going to let you know ASAP. So like 30 minutes later, he calls me. He's like, you're going to go to Detroit. Your flight's at 3, whatever, pack, go. Playing the game that day. I got to the arena at like 5:30. The game was at 7. Ended up playing like 20 minutes. I think I had like, I don't know if I had 3 or 5 points and a couple rebounds. Like, you know, I had a pretty good game. They like enough for them to see me. So they liked me, and I've been with them ever since. It's been like 3 or 4 games. And now I'm kind of just getting comfortable with them. Coach is getting comfortable with me. Like, I can feel it starting to pick up. So I think I'm going to have a real good end of the year.
Gordon, how do you kind of balance that unsettling feeling? Like, at any moment, this dude can come take my spot, or at any moment, a two-way player could come down and I might not play the whole game because of it. So how do you kind of balance that, those situations?
Yeah, I mean, you really can't. It's really like a day-to-day contract at this point. You know what I mean? I kind of know that. So you go, you play as hard as you can that day because you don't know what the hell's going to happen tomorrow. Doesn't matter what happened yesterday. Doesn't matter what they told you yesterday. Like, things change so fast. So you just got to, I mean, just keep getting better. That's what I'm focused on. Because wherever I land, I know I'm going to be hooping somewhere, so I just got to keep working out, keep getting better, you know?
Getting buckets.
Yeah, but bro, just get some buckets and you'll be good. I promise. Or defend. If you guard, you're good.
Yeah, we're at any level.
Any level.
So you mentioned a bunch of the dudes that you was hooping with on the Wisconsin Herd and, you know, some of the careers that they may have had in college. But I kind of want to talk about you and how your own D3 experience helped your transition to play in the G League.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it starts from like working your way up from that, like being a freshman. You guys know being a freshman, working your way up to be a senior, like it looks totally different. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't go the way you expect it for the good or the bad. So just learning that along the way, you know, didn't play freshman year, then started really playing, then COVID hit and there was adversity. We didn't play. And senior year, I'm the man and we win everything. And it was like just being able to get used to those up and downs helped me a lot at any level, even at Stetson. I also had a great coach at Wesleyan, Joe Riley, who was just a great all-around coach, leader, like really set the tone for the team, like built a great culture over there at Wesleyan. So just continuing to remember his values and his principles even helps me today. His work. I mean, he'd be in the gym working out. Like, we'd all wake up and get in the gym, and we're walking in there, and he's doing pull-ups, you know what I mean? Like, we're like, dude, this dude's like 55 years old. And he's in here before us doing pull-ups. Like, repping them out, like 15, 20. Like, we're like, he's still going, you know? But he was just that kind of guy. He just, like, attacked everything. So that's what I did at Stetson, and that's what I'm doing now. And I still talk to him a lot. I think I'll play in that Division III TBT tournament this year. I almost played last year, but I think I'll do it this year. But, yeah, I mean, you know, me and Terrell talk about it all the time. Nobody else listens. We just kind of are in our own world. We talk D3. But, yeah, it's something that will be with me forever for sure.
I kind of want to hear about that. Like, when you're talking with amongst each other about your college careers or anything, are they kind of disregarding, oh, you just went D3, like, that don't really matter?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of them, like, don't really ask a ton. It's like, oh, I'll play Division III. Oh, yeah, that's, like, you know, wow, like, that's impressive. You know, they're like, well, that's cool. But I think they think that I just had like, I averaged like 40, you know what I mean? And I was like that one exception, you know?
Yeah.
But in reality, like there's all type, there's a bunch of guys that are good enough to, or at least good enough to have a chance, you know, for sure.
I just want to hear about what it actually, you hear a ton of NBA players might say some pros or some cons about what it's like being in the G League, the travel situation, things of that nature. But I want to hear from you, what's like a day in the life like for Sam Peak and the G League?
Yeah, well, coming from where I came from, it's, you know, it's unbelievable. Like, I love every second of it. I mean, especially, like, because here we share a practice facility with the Pistons. So that's where we do everything. That's where we practice. That's where we work out. Like, you know, today I woke up. I got, like, it was, like, a 30-minute lift, 30, 40 minutes on court. Then they have a sauna, but did the ice bath. You know, they're scheduling massages all day. All you got to do is sign up and you get like a massage for 40 minutes. Like the fridges, the food, like it's crazy. I love every second. And if you should see my fridge right now, it's got like 10 different drinks, random stuff, immunity shots, like I have water in there that's got 20 grams of protein. I swear to God.
Yo, that's so wild how, like, your perspective is, this is the best thing ever, but yeah, someone in the league is like, this sucks. I'll never, like, I commend people that play in the G League because this is horrible. That's just interesting.
I mean, it's like, I forget who it was the first couple of days on the herd. They were like, they were pissed because nobody would bring their delivery. Like, they were pissed because one of the managers wouldn't bring the delivery food to, like, their door, to their hotel or whatever. And he was like, that's how I know the G League is going to be ass, you know? I'm like,
nah, that's so crazy.
You know, it's the lobby. Like. But yeah, different perspectives, but I'm loving every second of it.
That's dope, bro. That's dope.
Yeah, it's cool.
So kind of just to wrap it up, honestly, you talked a lot throughout this whole, you know, podcast just about how you've dealt with some adversity in your basketball career, you know, when it comes to you being a late bloomer. Or not playing that much your freshman year, or, you know, at Stetson and now the G. Kind of talk about how you have dealt with adversity in your basketball career and what's your advice to hoopers going through adversity and how they can push through.
Yeah, I mean, I think at every level there's adversity from freaking JV, middle school, all the way to the, you know, the highest level ever. And just from what I've seen from, like, players that have gone through it and just being at pretty much almost every level, just, like, especially guys at this level, they just keep their nose down and just, like, just keep, like, working and keep doing what you're doing. Build a routine, like, whatever you like to do. Like, lately I've been stretching a ton. My body's been feeling great. Like, little routines like that, just eating healthy, just staying consistent in whatever you're doing. I think that should be a priority, even if you're not a hooper or anything you're doing. Just building a routine and sticking to it. But, yeah, adversity is at every level, so you're not going to get away from it. So, you know, you just got to attack it head on, whether that's spending more time in the books, whether that's spending more time in the court, whether that's spending more time talking to your family or talking to your friends, like just making sure you're right in the mind and your body's feeling good. And I know it's huge right now, like health and diet, and, like, everybody's coming up with these crazy – nutrition, you know, all this crap's going around, but yeah, just making, you know, putting yourself first and just keeping yourself as a priority.
Good advice. Appreciate it. To end this episode, we're going to do a little rapid fire and starting five edition. So let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
Let's go.
All right. Top three 8-4-5 hoopers that you have played with.
Top three 8-4-5 hoopers that I've played with. I'm going to go Elijah Hughes, me, and Hassan French.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys know French. He was from, he's from Middletown. He's actually playing in the G League right now. He played at St. Louis for a couple years basketball, then went overseas, and then he was like a practice player for the Titans as a defensive end because he was huge. He was like 6'8", 250. And I just saw him. He's, like, back on the Toronto Raptors or the G League team. So.
That's a crazy career.
Like, yeah, but other names, like, I mean, Tyrese Williams is overseas making a lot of money right now. I mean, there's all types of guys.
favorite basketball movie?
Probably Blue Chips with Shaq.
Okay.
That's an OG one.
I've never seen that.
No, you got to watch that.
It's perfect. Solid. It's solid.
I'll add it.
And last but not least, favorite NBA player?
I mean, LeBron's my GOAT, but KD is man, you know?
Word. It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird because some of these guys are technically like your peers now. You know what I mean? Like you're, although like you haven't been, you know, called up yet. Still.
Like there's some NBA vets in the fucking in the G League. Like Lance Stevenson. Shit, I got a list to be honest. But,
Kenneth Faried.
Yeah, we played Kenneth Faried. Like dudes like Jeremy Lamb. I forget. I got all types of dudes.
Nah, that's tough. But this addition of the starting five, so. If you were a coach assembling a starting five, who would your list be, point guard through center? And this edition is going to be shooters strictly based off their shooting capability that you've played with in your career. It could be from your high school days all the way to now. And just say like where you played with them and what makes them such a good shooter or whatever.
Okay. All right, well, number one, I'm going to have to do my sister, I think.
I like that. That's cool.
He can shoot it, dude.
At the one?
Yeah, I'm going her at the one. She would be shooting with us. She'll hit like 10, 15 threes in a row, like consistently. Like she was leading the MAC in 3-pointers as a freshman last year. But yeah, I'm gonna go her at the one. Bro, this is crazy. I don't know if I have five shooters to be honest.
All right, switch it.
Got another one? Yeah.
All right, let's do top five players that you've like played against in the G League, and just say like where they're at right now and why you thought they were so tough.
Okay. Well, one, we played versus Derek Favors this year, who was a beast. I mean, he's not at his peak anymore, but we got to respect Derek Favors.
Yeah.
No.
Derek Favors. JD Davidson gave us like 45.
Cup.
He's a bucket. I mean, honestly, playing alongside Wayne and Gabriel is cool. He's got like six, you know, years in the NBA on like six different teams. Like, if you know, if you talk to anybody about adversity and stuff like that, I mean, he's made his money. He's good, but that's fine. In terms of the other stuff, who else do we play? I mean, Kenneth Faried was up there, too. He was, like, he lost so much weight, though. He was skinny. He was, like, 195.
Is he still bouncy?
Yeah, still bouncy for sure.
That's tough.
Hold on, bro. Give me a minute. I got a list. Hold on. I got some G League lists.
I heard you. We'll wait.
Let me see, man. Yeah, Derek Favors. Oh, we played Jordan Bell, too. Jordan Bell was tough. Stanley Johnson. Oh, Justice Winslow was good, too.
I mean,
Justice
Winslow
was tough. He's playing for the Raptors. Jeremy Lamb, Theo Pence. Oh, Elfrid Payton, too. Tony Snell. Like, there's guys all over. It's crazy.
Nah, there's guys.
Nah, there's some dudes on that list.
Bro, it's so hard to get in the NBA right now. It's crazy.
So, is that, like, your overall plan? Is that what you're trying to do? Because I imagine you could get a contract for more money overseas. What's the thought process behind playing in the G?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now for me – I'll definitely give the G League another year for sure after this year, just to test out the waters. But I'm not going to sit around here if there's nothing, you know, if there's more money overseas and there's like real legit contracts and some cool places, like I want to go travel, play, make some money, you know, get to the Euro League maybe.
Fire.
But I'm definitely going to give the G League another look next year because first off, it's good money and you're still in the States. Like my family can still see you come watch the games. Like I'm traveling around, like there's people, you know, so the G League is cool in that sense. And it's also, like, it gives you, like, the NBA experience a little bit, which is cool, you know?
That's fact. Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate your time, Sam. You've been a great guest.
Yeah, thank you guys, man. I love the name, too. I saw that DM. I was like, yeah, I got to help my guys out.
Appreciate it, bro, for real.
Yeah, big time.
Good luck the rest of the season, man. Keep doing your thing, bro. You got fans in us.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you haven't already, make sure to go follow all the socials at Not Even D2. You can catch every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, KJ Allison, and I'll see you next episode.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.